Welcome to this episode of Saintly Witnesses. On this particular episode, I got Louis Damani Jones on, who's going to come on and share a little bit about his macro level advocacy that he does in the Catholic Church, and talk about some of his highlights that he has accomplished in the Catholic Church. So thank you for coming on.
Man, I'm honored to be here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So let's jump right into the conversation. My first question I like to ask people is, summarize your Catholic journey. Are you a convert, revert, or a cradle Catholic? And if so, how did you get to where you are now?
So, this is always a tough question, and I like to look at like people's conversion, reversion stories as like a diamond or like a jewel. You hold it up to the light in different angles, you kind of reflect different. And I think throughout life, it's a continual process of conversion. So I think at different points, different things stand out, right? As kind of being where God met you, because he's always been there, right? So in all those different moments throughout your whole life, he's really been present guiding you. So even in those small things. So I would consider myself a revert. My mom is Catholic. I was baptized Catholic as an infant. My mom, my dad, my godmother, my godfather all actually helped to start an intentional community in New York, in Manhattan, called Stand Up Harlem. And that community was birthed out of the Emmaus movement. The Emmaus movement was started by a monk priest named Abbe Pierre in Europe. And my dad actually had been experiencing homelessness. He was formerly incarcerated. He had HIV/AIDS, and he had formerly, well, he had struggled. He was struggling with addiction at that time, and this was the late 80s. And he found himself at one of these Emmaus houses. And the Emmaus movement is all about living intentional community. So, it's not just like a homeless shelter, but it's like a place where you live community. And so, it was actually Catholic based, although my dad, his religious journey is a little bit eclectic. But then from there, they founded the Stand Up Harlem Project, which was birthed out of that. And so it had a lot of Catholic foundations, and I was born actually in that intentional community. And so that was in the early 90s in Manhattan. Shortly after that, my mom moved back to Southern Illinois area, where she had originally been from. And I grew up kind of in Eastern Missouri, that's St. Louis area and Southern Illinois. And didn't really have a strong faith journey. I was like kind of connected to the church, right, through like elementary school. Like I went to a Catholic school, I received the sacraments and stuff like that, but like we never like cracked a Bible or anything like that at home. Like we didn't talk about the catechism, like we never like talked about like religion in that way. I think probably the most Christian thing I ever did outside of church was like listen to Kirk Franklin. Like I can't imagine, like that's probably the only thing like we ever. And we went to like the Universal Circus. I'm not sure if anybody's going to that, but they have like at the end the Kirk Franklin, I believe. It's like very beautiful. Anyways, a lot of religious stuff wasn't really present in kind of outside of a church setting. And really my main religion was activism. My dad was a community organizer. Again, him and my mom and some others in my family had founded this multi-million dollar project that had people like Bob Dylan came, Salt-N-Pepa came and shot videos for them and all kinds of stuff through the 90s. And so like activism was just really big in my family. And so, I mean, growing up, I was out there. I was volunteering with a lot of stuff that was about like, protection for people with HIV/AIDS, like how do we get more resources for them and things like that. Also volunteer at places like Planned Parenthood through high school. So I was not really connected to the church deeply, like through high school and through elementary school and middle school and things like that. And so activism was my main thing. Activism, politics, like that was my big thing. I would say like towards the end of high school, college, I felt God kind of tugging on me a little bit. And I was just reading a bunch of spiritual stuff, read Siddhartha, the Bhagavad Gita. I read just tons of different spiritual works, read the Quran. I mean, I was just reading a lot of stuff. I had no real interest in Christianity. I wasn't like against Christianity, but it just wasn't, didn't feel super relevant to me. And so I was kind of like a spiritual person, read New Age stuff, like just whatever I could find. And I felt a call to learn more about God, but just it had no real bearing in terms of my personal behavior. It was really just like an idea, like kind of a philosophical journey, if you will. So I would say like when my conversion really started, I would say deeply, is like I felt God calling me to start just reading the Bible. So I kind of just read the Bible. This was during college a little bit. Just picked it up every so often. I found it to be interesting. Didn't fully understand it really, but I would just kind of read through a little bit. And in 2014, Michael Brown was killed in North St. Louis, and I felt deeply moved to go and be present there. So I just went. I was out on the street, just super active in that world. And eventually, through a long process, trying to keep this truncated, I ended up starting with a group of people in an activist house. And that activist house was in North St. Louis City with a group of activists. Some were college, some were older. And the whole goal was to be a black brown powerhouse, where activists could live and kind of be. It was like a transitional kind of place for activists to come and stay as they do actions and they launch projects, in the area. And so did that. And then right there was where God really grabbed me extremely hard. And I don't know why. It was a very weird place for that to happen. But there was a guy who lived with us who was he had formerly gone to Union Theological Seminary in New York. And we started to get into a lot of just debates, like back and forth on religion, on like the relevancy of religion to what we were doing. And just in that debate and discourse, like I felt God deeply convicting me to just grow closer to him. And by the end of my time in that house, like I was looked at as like a deeply like evangelical type person. Now I didn't go to any actual like church building or anything, but I was just so much reading the Bible. Like I would listen to the Psalms. Like I just felt God calling me. And even as we were doing activist work, I just felt more and more called to grow close to Christ. And it all culminated in one special moment where I ended up going to the Coptic Orthodox Church. We actually had an activist who was living with us, and he had gone to do an action out of state. And so he left his kids with us and his wife with us. And so I was kind of tasked with being with them for a little bit. And so I was like, hey, you all want to go to this Coptic Orthodox church with me? And they were like, sure, we don't even know what that is. So then I took them with me. And when I showed up at the Coptic Orthodox church, we were sitting in the back, and the priest was walking by. And if you know anything about the Coptic Orthodox liturgy, they have a lot of incense. And so he's walking by with the Sharia, and he was incensing the icons. And he walked by us and he said, "Are you Ethiopian?" And that's the only thing he said to me the whole thing. I was like, "No, we're not Ethiopian." He's like, "Okay." And then he kept going. And that was my first time ever stepping back into like any type of church of apostolic Christian origin. I mean, in years. I don't even know how many years. And so from there, like God, it was just like a hyper fast. God was calling me to come back. So long story short, I did end up eventually coming back to that church, and that priest who passed by me the first day ended up becoming my first spiritual father. He became the priest who brought me back into apostolic Christianity, and so then I kind of became a part of the Coptic Orthodox Church. I was with them for probably about 3 years or so, deeply involved. With them, I learned about the church fathers, the desert fathers. I learned about fasting. I learned about prayer. I learned about what the liturgy means. I was a reader. You know, they still have a seven-layer ordination system in their tradition. And so I was a reader. So I deeply learned the liturgy and just like all the different facets of why we do the liturgy, how we do it, Coptic Orthodox hymnology, so many things. And so just got a deep love for the church and the spirituality, especially of the desert fathers in the early church. And basically was so formed by that community. So how did I get to the Catholic Church? How did I come back to the Catholic Church? Basically, I used to do a Bible study with an Ethiopian deacon. You know, if you know anything about the Coptic Orthodox Church community, many of them are from Egypt. So many of them are immigrants from Egypt. And so in many Coptic Orthodox churches in the United States, it's kind of bifurcated between the Arabic speakers and the English speakers. And so I was deeply invested with the English speakers, but there was a small group. And so the Ethiopian deacon was one of the leaders of that English Bible study. And so anyways, we were doing a Bible study, and one of the women who came to the English Bible study, she's a doctor, and she asked us, "Hey, like, so I'm going to my friend's Catholic wedding. Can I take communion there?" And we were like, "Oh no, of course not. Like they're heretics. You can't take communion from heretics like the Catholics." And after that conversation, I just felt like, why am I saying this? Like what makes me have so much animosity? And so I was like, let me really go deep into understanding like the reason why it would be so wrong to do that. And so that led me on a journey to study the summaries of all the church councils, especially the early ones. And actually read some of the councils. Now, if you know anything about the church councils, some of them it's hard to read through, but some of them have really good summaries. And so I read summaries of all of them. And at the end of that process, I was like, I have to become Catholic. Like, I was like, I agree. Every single thing that I thought I didn't agree, I agreed. I agreed on the Tome of Leo, which is the big the discussion about the nature of Christ that separated the Coptic Orthodox or the Oriental Orthodox churches from the Eastern Orthodox and Catholic churches. I, you know, believed everything as it relates to basically every topic, from the dual nature of Christ with his wills to the minds of Christ, like every single thing. I was like, I agree with this. And so I actually had to sit down one day after the liturgy, and I was sitting with a group of older Coptic Orthodox women and the priest, and I told them, like, hey y'all, like I'm gonna be like joining the Catholic Church. And they were just they freaked out. They were like, oh my goodness, because like I was like always there, like I was like one of the token converts, if you will. So like it was like devastating to them that I would leave. So I told them, like, I have to do it. Like, and the priest too was like, is it my fault? Is it something I did? He was like super devastated. But no, he was great. So anyways, after that, ended up coming into the Catholic Church and coming back into the Catholic Church. And that's when I really had a big encounter as well with Catholic social doctrine. You know, I had been an activist, like that had been a huge part of my life. When I came into the Coptic Orthodox Church, it was like a deep kind of ascetic spirituality. So very like not against the world, but like, you know, people like making change in the world and bringing their faith to bear on temporal reality was not a big part of Coptic Orthodox spirituality. Really, the monk, the person who left the world, was looked at as like the icon of faith. And so for me, you know, I kind of took the same vision. But but when I came to the Catholic Church, I rediscovered the power of Catholic social doctrine, and really like what especially the Second Vatican Council has done in terms of shifting the goals of the laity, understanding what the laity are actually meant to do in the world. And right after that, I actually began to work for the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. It was like a swift transition in there. I had been doing activist work still, kind of on the side a little bit, and this was something that I felt like would be a good segue for me to like start to get active back in my church community. So anyways, so that's how I came back to the Catholic Church, and so I consider myself a revert. Again, like, and that's why I have such a love for the Second Vatican Council. You know, it's one of those things that when you rediscover it and when you see it with fresh eyes, you find this is what the people, even in the Orthodox churches, are looking for. You know, they have a very, in the Coptic Orthodox Church and even in the Oriental and Eastern Orthodox churches, their spirituality is so deep, so rich, so ancient, but it's a lot of the young adults especially have a challenge with modernity. You know, how do I, as a faithful Catholic or faithful Orthodox or Christian person, how do I bring this ancient faith to bear in modern reality, in the complexity of globalization that we have? All of these different questions are really answered by the Second Vatican Council. And so, you know, it's one of those things that I'm passionate about, is helping people to understand the Second Vatican Council is such a gift, you know, to the universal church. So yeah, it's a little truncated version.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. And I can see how, like, the roots and the seeds were planted in your youth with your parents and the work that they did and the groundbreaking
Yeah.
work that they did and how they led you to now. And even I forgot to mention that you got a master's degree in social work. So you're a fellow master social worker too, just as I am. So that's good to hear.
Yeah.
So my second question is, you kind of touched on this about you working for USCCB in that way. In 2020, you were awarded the Cardinal Bernardin New Leadership Award through the USCCB. What were some of the things that you did for you to get that recognition?
That's a great question. I don't know. I feel like I was undeserving of that, to be honest with you. I had worked with them at that point for about 2 years. And I'd worked in both Southern Illinois and Eastern Missouri. And I mean, a lot of the stuff I was doing with my work was really trying to connect young adults with Catholic social doctrine. I gave talks, like I was just doing a lot of stuff like that. And, you know, just helping out on the local level, helping out with all of the funded groups that we had in Archdiocese of St. Louis and Southern Illinois. And it's really just basic ground. I did also did organizing training for youth in East St. Louis and the public housing developments, public housing, along with some of our CCHD funded groups, really to try to teach the fundamentals of community organizing amongst people who, amongst teens who are really seeing violence every day, struggles. I'll never forget when one day I was doing a training, and it was a wide spectrum of ages, probably about between 16 to like early 20s. And this woman came in, this girl who, you know, had been coming to the organizing sessions, and she was just talking to, she was just, you know, she was fine, she was good, and she just like dropped very nonchalantly that one of her friends had just got shot driving into a gas station and then basically hit the gas station because they shot him in the head while he was driving, and he just ran to the gas station. And just how she said it was just no emotion. And I was like, ask her, like, are you okay? Okay, like, how do you feel about that? And she was like, oh, this is just every day. Like, I mean, and it's sad. It was sad. It was one of those things that just it really hit me in my heart. And of course, like, living in places that I've lived, I know this is the reality. But in that moment, it was just like, man. And so, with our community organizing training, we're really trying to help youth to get the skills to be able to create better outcomes for their communities, to organize and to find these fundamentals that they can work with government officials, leaders in their community, to try to create the community that they want to live in. So people don't want to leave the community, but people want to make it a better place. So I was doing some of that work during that time as well. But they don't really tell you, like, you get nominated by someone. And then, I ended up getting that award. And I really feel like, again, so many people I was working with, so many awesome groups, like, there's so many people who are more deserving of that award than I was. But I did win it at that time. So.
That's cool to hear, Ben, and congratulations too. Even though I'm like 4 years late, congratulations.
Right. Yeah.
So a common theme I noticed that you've been saying is like the necessity of being involved at the community and macro level, and it's like the importance of like the grassroots organizing and engaging with the people. And you already got that award from with the Cardinal Bernard in New Leadership recognition. Have you been like recognized in other ways too in the church besides that award?
I don't know. I don't know if I have. Again, I don't feel like I should have got that award anyway. But I don't think I've had any other like formal recognitions or anything like that. I try to serve as much as I can, so I recently served on the board of Catholic Charities for 3 years. I just moved off of that in the Archdiocese of St. Louis. I serve on a board, Catholic Urban Programs, which is in East St. Louis as well, East St. Louis, Illinois. And we try to just create a better community through our programs, through our mission, which has a historic legacy in the Metro East of the St. Louis region. I serve with Vagabond Missions, trying to help inner city teens get connected with the gospel. And they have such a fundamentally just transformative mission that they're doing. Before Gethsemane Initiative is an organization I work with, which is really trying to help to fight xenophobia and racism through training, through consulting, and other projects like that.
Cool. And you don't even need an award or like high profile recognition. All those organizations and achievements that you do are like rewards in themselves. So that's good. So my next question is, you were influential with the startup of this podcast called The Civic Moment. Not sure if you're probably not affiliated with it anymore. So describe a little bit like how that came into being and why was it important and what did you hope to get people to get from it?
Yeah, so this civic moment, I'm really honored that I got to work on that project as well. It was really a timing thing. So I was a fellow at the Gephardt Institute for Civic and Community Engagement, and the Gephardt Institute was founded by former United States Congressman Richard Gephardt. Sometimes people know him as Dick Gephardt. And he was a leader in the House of Representatives in the l late 1990s, I think, and early 2000s. Presidential candidate on the Democratic side as well. It was a nonpartisan institute, but his legacy was really important. And he was a person known for bipartisanship, known for trying to bridge divides, trying to make hard decisions, and try to make compromise real. And so, in the spirit of that legacy, I was invited to try to create a podcast for us at the Gephardt Institute. And they gave me a podcast that was this, if anyone knows about the time that this came out, like everyone was trying to do a podcast about COVID-19, like the impacts of COVID-19 and like what the how COVID-19 is changing. I was like, I'm not doing a podcast on COVID-19. Like there's so many podcasts trying to do that exact same thing. I was like, let's do something different that's more like forward looking. So let's look at how through this difficult time, through this civic moment that we're going through, which had there's a lot of things were going on. How can we create this spirit of dialogue in society? How can we create this spirit of conversation across difference, dialogue across difference? And really, I was actually explicitly grounded in the idea of civic friendship, which I was really inspired about, from Aristotle and his work on civic friendship. Friendship being like this highest good of a community, and really what founds the common good of a community. Beautifully, this same topic was taken up by Pope Francis in his document for Telly Tutti, where he talks about social friendship, which is actually like it's a synonymous term. Civic friendship and social friendship are synonymous. So it was just really awesome timing because that came out like right after we started the podcast. It was like really crazy. And I did not consult with Pope Francis ahead of time. So it was just a weird timing. But you know, that podcast was really me and this other guy who now works in Washington, D.C. Me and him are really just trying to have, we have these awesome conversations anyway. And we're like, let's find people we can talk to. And so, you know, we had Republican folks, people who even ran for governor in Illinois who were on our podcast. We had consultants on our podcast. We had Jewish activists on our podcast. We had such a wide range of folks on our podcast. And our goal was just to understand, what caused you to get involved? Like, what caused you to get involved in your community, and why the specific way that you chose to get involved? And we really try to learn from them, you know, what inspires you about your work, and what would lead somebody else to be inspired to give their life to civic service. And the main goal too was to help people to understand that civic service was not just running for government, right? As well, even though we had people who were in government on our podcast. It was also about how you get involved through a faith lens. Like we talked to folks, a folk who was a Protestant minister, as well as the Jewish activist. She's a minister and rabbi. We asked, like, how come through your faith lens you were called to get involved in this civic way? We had other leaders, civic leaders. We had people who wrote books. We had an author named Vivian Gibson who wrote a book about called The Last Children of Mill Creek, which was really just about this one area of St. Louis that was a mainly African-American community that was devastated, and her personal experience, her personal testimony. She didn't even feel called to be an activist, but she just was in this little writing workshop. People read her work and was like, you should turn this into a book. And she ended up doing that and became a kind of an advocate for history and how history and narratives really help to shape how we understand communities and how communities change over time. And that is civic engagement, right? And so that was the goal, is to understand how all these diverse people who had these different ways of engaging civically felt called to do it, and how anyone, no matter what your career path is also called to have that civic dimension to themselves.
Very good, very good. Sound like you met with a lot of on the grounds people doing transformative work. So my next question is, through all this conversation that you've been sharing, you sound super passionate about Catholic social teaching. It even influenced you to leave the other apostolic tradition to come back to the church. What energizes you about the Catholic social doctrine?
Catholic social doctrine is like, it's my heart. It's my, like, I feel like too, with vocations and with callings and with conversions, you have, every person has a love language, like, and God knows what yours is. Like, some people, it's like they were like read St. Thomas Aquinas when they were like in high school and they were like, oh, I love this. And they're like called to that. Or some people, you know, whatever it may be, they may go on some type of a mission trip and they're like, wow, like, you know, just realizing the universality of the church or whatever. And I was called through, like, I feel like I was called in my work of activism. God called me where I was at in this activist house, and I was doing that work. And even though I took kind of a little interesting detour within the Coptic tradition, God used that for a reason for sure. But you know, that was really my love language. And so Catholic social doctrine to me is like, it's not philosophy. It's not political science. It's moral theology. It's actually an aspect of our tradition. St. John Paul II describes it as an essential aspect of the new evangelization. It's something that we all as Catholics need to recognize as a part of what we're called to bring to the world, most particularly the laity. And so why I think I'm so passionate about it is because it's a key aspect of what it means to live holiness, right? If the laity are called by the Second Vatican Council talks about, the laity's special mission is to transform temporal realities. Priests are not called to transform temporal realities. Priests are not called to be involved in politics. Priests are not called to, they can definitely have a witness as it relates to organizing and things like that, but really the exact temporal and economic structure of society is not called, priests and religious are not called to shape that either. It's really the laity who are called, because we're the ones who are shaping these institutions. We're the ones who are in the positions of power to make decisions. So it's really us who have to know Catholic social doctrine in order to accurately evangelize society through that, through whatever work we may happen to be doing. So I'm so passionate about it because I think it's one of these things in our tradition that for some reason is just neglected. It's like a blind spot. And even when so many people have been so excited about St. John Paul II, his theology of the body, many of the other awesome things that he's done and written, His Catholic social doctrine, he's also, I think, of all the past popes, he's contributed the most to Catholic social doctrine compared to any other pope, I believe, by number of encyclicals on this topic, even more than Pope Francis, which may surprise many people. I think Pope Francis is getting up there. If he puts like another document, he may be like tied with him. But right now, it's St. John Paul II. And I think that's just so interesting to me. Like, why are people not understanding? We can't. It's not, it can't be on the side, right? It can't just be only like those social justice Christians, right, who are talking about this. No, this is actually for everyone, whether you're an adoration Christian or a social justice Christian, whatever you want to call yourself. You're called to know Catholic social doctrine and to apply it into the world, to transform society, no matter where you find yourself. If you're a stay-at-home mom, Catholic social doctrine is for you. If you are a business owner, small business owner, Catholic social doctrine is definitely for you. It's for everyone. But no matter what you do, it's not just being a legislator and making policy decisions. It's not just, forming consciences for faithful citizenship whenever you're going to vote. It definitely are those things, but it's actually every, no matter what your vocation is, there's an element of Catholic social doctrine relevant to that, even how you structure your household. So I just think it's so important. I think it's just a blind spot right now. Even in our catechesis, we don't teach it very well. And I think that's why a lot of people don't, it doesn't connect with people as being essential.
That's a good point about the laity being like motivated and involved in the community. So my last question is, when we talk about issues regarding equity and justice, what are some things that Catholics need to keep at the forefront as like reminders about the faith?
Yeah, I'll say, especially as it relates to equity and justice. Now, Cardinal Turkson had he did an interview. When was this? I don't even remember when this was. This was probably like 2020, 2021, something like that. And he was asked about the use of the term social justice because it was something that many people were questioning, like, when we say social justice, what do we mean? And he did say how we mean in the Catholic tradition social justice may not be the same that people mean in society. And I wrote an article on this. On the progression of, it's titled The Progression of Language. I don't think I chose that title, but it was chosen for me. If you go on the Before Gethsemane website, I talk about the importance of how we understand certain terms from the Catholic standpoint and how they may be understood in society. The main point being, as Catholics, we all it's a requirement of our faith to seek social justice. It's the requirement of our faith to seek equity, specifically equity. Now, this is where I get into the nuance because people say, what is equity? So, yes, we're called to seek a more equitable society. We're called to seek to reduce social inequities in the world. That's from the Catechism and from the Second Vatican Council. We're called to transform society and make the world a more just place based on the principle of the dignity of every human person. And we're called to do that in a non-ideological manner. What do I mean by that? Pope Francis often speaks against ideology. And by ideology, we mean all of these kind of ideas or whatever theories that people try to concoct that take us away from the fundamental principle that the ordering of society is not for any ideology, whatever that ideological regime may be. It's for the dignity of every human life. It's for the dignity of every single human person. And for me, as somebody who was engaged in organizing, that's actually the reason why I was organizing before I even knew that was the reason I was organizing. Like, that was the whole heart. It's like, you want to protect people who have been, the victims of racialized violence. Why? Because it's an affront against their dignity. It's an affront against their humanity, right? If you go all the way back to King, he had a similar framing, for his own. The dignity of every human personality is the way he kind of put it. But the main point is, we have to do that non-ideologically, because I think the ideology is what gets a lot of us off, into tangents, into places where we're disunified. And so my main thing to I would say to Catholics or Christians who are in the work of justice, who are working for the work of justice, is to seek to do so in a way that is non-ideological, or that you're willing to challenge, because every person has biases, but you're willing to challenge your own biases. You're willing to go beyond to really encounter the other, right? You're willing to push beyond whatever you may feel maybe your like most immediate instinct in the situation, because that's the only way we'll be able to bridge those divides. When I was having those conversations as a part of this civic moment, we got some pushback at times because we had some guests on who had views that, people were like, why do we have these people? Now, we had a diverse set, but sometimes people are saying, well, you should not platform, these people or whatever. But my main thing was, look, we have to encounter the other, right? You can have your own views for sure, but in order to create a better society together, it can't be about the ideas. Pope Francis in his document, Evangelii Gaudium, He has this special term, which to me encapsulates how we fight against ideology in the work of justice. Reality is more important than ideas. That's what he says. He says it's a key for leadership. Reality is more important than ideas. And so if there's any phrase that I would leave anyone with who's in the work for justice, reality is more important than ideas. Make sure you're fighting for reality. Make sure you're fighting for truth and justice. But make sure you do it in such a way that you're not building a camp, right? A camp for yourself, but you're opening your heart up to the universal, right? Because that's what, as Catholics, that's what we're called to do. So that's a little bit of a word of wisdom, I guess I'll give.
Yeah, that's an important word of wisdom and a good way to end the podcast with a magnificent charge, and a great quote from a true saintly witness in the church. Well, I definitely appreciate you sharing all your wisdom about how to engage in the community macro level and just also understanding a little bit about your faith journey too, which had a lot of dynamic and moving parts. But I'm glad you found your way back home. Yeah, so I'm glad you found your way back to the Catholic Church, man. So that's good. Well, I definitely appreciate you coming and sharing the wisdom, man.
Oh man, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. It was a blessing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and may the people pray for you and the work that you do and all the success that you may have. And you guys can tune into the next episode of Saintly Witnesses.